Welcome back to the second edition of the MPHS podcast. I'm your host, Aristos Xanthus. I am a student, musician, audiophile, and artist, and today's topic is discovering what makes someone unique. All of us have individual talents or expertise. It is what makes us who we are as individuals. In today's podcast, we have three extraordinary individuals who share with us their story. Stay tuned to learn more about what makes these three individuals unique at Mount Pleasant High School. At most schools, many students participate in a variety of sports as extracurricular activities. Football, basketball, soccer, tennis, bowling? Although it is not as common as its counterparts, bowling is a serious sport that takes a lot of skill, time, and dedication to master. At Mount Pleasant High School, one student is an avid bowler who was generous enough to share her thoughts and experience on the unique sport.
I'm Melanie. I'm an 11th grader, and I go to Mount Pleasant High School, and I'm a bowler.
Melanie had the unique opportunity to be introduced to bowling at a very young age.
My grandfather used to bowl, and he worked at a pro shop in Cupertino at Homestead Lanes. And basically, ever since I got out of the hospital when I was born, I'd go there every day. And then I just started going down to the lanes, picking up balls, just throwing it. And then basically from there on, I would ask people, like, because I wouldn't like to practice alone. So I'd just go up to people like, hey, can I bowl with you? And that's how I kind of just started being social and bowling.
For Melanie, bowling has been more than just a sport. It has been a way to connect with family and friends.
Well, I bowl because it was something that I did when I was very young. And even my brother did it, my sister did it, but my brother quit and my sister quit. But I usually do it mostly because it's very social. I get to meet very new people from everywhere. And you know, it makes me happy to bowl, even though sometimes it doesn't look like I'm happy about it. Because you know, when you bowl bad, you won't want to be happy from that.
Through ample practice, she was able to be a part of a bowling league program.
So first off, I just started just practicing because, you know, you don't want to just start off in a league when you don't know what you're doing. But they do have bumper leagues, but I never actually bowled in a bumper league. I've never used bumpers. I started right off from the get-go. But then I did join a league when I was 6, and I found out there's this thing called All-Stars. Basically, every year they choose top so many people in NorCal and SoCal.
She's participated in many regional, state, and national tournaments.
There's junior gold, which is gigantic. There's SYC. There's Youth Bowlers Tour. There's so many I can't think of, but there's just a lot I do.
To get this good, you have to be passionate, committed, and serious.
People say, oh, well, I don't practice because I don't have time. You have to have the commitment to make time for something that you are passionate about. So that is one thing. And what's also you need to do is you have to learn more about it also. You can't come into the sport. You can come in not knowing what to do, but you have to start asking questions, go to pro shops. You have to want to do it. You can't be forced to bowl. So that's what makes anybody passionate. If you're forced to bowl, there's no passion there.
So bowling can be very time-consuming, very intensive, right? Just with anything, right? Sports, music, whatever it might be. So how do you balance the two? And do you do more on weekends versus...
Yeah, okay, basically my schedule throughout the week is I leave Mondays, Thursdays, and sometimes Fridays off for just school. And then Tuesdays I go practice, Wednesdays I go practice. Saturdays I have league, which I have league Wednesday nights too. And Sundays are for tournaments, you know. And sometimes we also have tournament Saturdays. But yeah, it's another thing where you have to make time for it if you really care for it.
She started taking bowling more seriously around 8th grade when she moved to Cloverleaf, a more competitive program.
Before then, when I just started, I was bowling, but I didn't really care. Like, I'd go down, bowl, I'd play video games while I bowled, you know, like, I really could care less about my score. But the thing is, it's because I had no competition. So, like, I was always winning at Homestead, you know, I was like, I have nothing here, you know, I'm just bowling. But then when I moved to Cloverleaf, there was a lot more competition. I had to work harder.
In her bowling career, Melanie has won 7 Youth Bowlers Tour titles, placed 1st and 2nd in Storm Youth Championships, and placed 9th at Junior Gold, a national tournament. In addition, she is a Youth Open Doubles Champion, Turbo Collegiate Champion, Hillman Trios Champion, and a 10-year NorCal All-Star. She is considered going pro and making bowling a career, but there are limitations.
Yeah, so I want to do bowling when I get older, but I know I need that. I know, like, bowling can't, I can't make a live off of it because, like, you don't win everything and, you know, you can't live in a house and you don't have a tournament every single day, every single weekend. Mm-hmm. So, like, I want to, you know, go to college, major.
Of course, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm going to probably, I'd say bowling would be like a side job, basically.
Nonetheless, she wants to pursue bowling in college.
The one place I've been looking at is NCANT, which is North Carolina Agriculture and Technology. And I've been looking at that place for a while now. And, you know, I think I could get into the school and I think I could make the team.
NCAT is a smaller school that isn't as renowned for its bowling program. But she feels that she would have a better experience being a part of that team versus a more popular school's team.
Some people want to go for, like, the top schools. Like, there's schools like Vanderbilt, there's schools like Wichita. And, like, those are, like, really good bowling schools. But for me, like, I wonder, like, do I want to be on a great team but sit on the bench during competition? Because not everybody can bowl. But everyone could be on the team, I'm sure. But, yeah, not everyone can bowl, so I'd rather represent a school that isn't, you know, like, winning all of them and represent them and, you know, like, you know, make a new team, make new friends, obviously.
Melanie shared her perspective on being a female bowler.
It's tough, you know, like, people say, if you bowl against a guy, oh, you'll probably lose because they've got more revs than you or more speed than you. And it's really nothing about that. It just, you know, if, I mean, once you let go of the ball, you have no control over it. You know, it's just something that, you know, you put faith in. But really, like, you know, like, a pro bowler, Kelly Kulik, she's been to a tournament and she went against the guys and the girls and she won it. So it's not really about gender. It's more just about how lucky you are one day. Because, you know, some pins where they stand up when you hit the pocket perfectly. It just happens.
I asked Melanie why bowling is underrated as a sport.
I'd probably say because it's not the easiest sport. There's so much math. There's so much, like, there's just so much to learn about it. And it's hard to explain. But, like, you know, in baseball, you know, you just gotta hit the ball and run. In bowling, you have to know the lane pattern, know your ball, make sure you know where to stand, you know. And in, like, all these other sports, you can see the goal, you know, like in golf, you see you have to hit it in the hole. With bowling, your target is invisible, really. The oil you can't see. So it's just harder to know what is going to happen because you can only see what's going to happen and then you hope to have a good end result. So that's probably why it's not well known. It's because it's a more complicated sport than most.
Regardless, the game has taught her many life lessons and skills.
You learn that you have to relax. You know, whenever you do anything, you can't be pressured because, you know, you get up there and you'll have something in your mind, but if you don't clear it, then you overthink, which is just all bad. It's bad for school too. Like, I've been through it. I've had, like, there was one point in time where I had, like, a headache every single day of every single week just because of overstressing. So with bowling, you really need to calm down. You think about the shot off the approach, visualize where you want to throw the ball, and then when you get on that approach, you just need to be clear-minded.
Lesson learned, be confident and don't overthink it. With a sport as technically demanding as bowling, it's best to focus on the shot and let the ball fly. Although bowling isn't as popular as other mainstream sports, it makes those who excel at it that much more unique. Since the dawn of man, humans have always been traveling. Nomadic tribes traversed the globe in search of food, water, and shelter. In more modern times, others traveled to find a better life. But some travel because it's more than just getting from point A to point B. It serves as a learning opportunity to find one's identity. A history teacher at Mount Pleasant has traveled the world and was eager to share his experience.
I am Tom Tran. I have been teaching at Mount Pleasant High School for 20 years and 3 years at Pegasus High School prior to Mount Pleasant. So altogether, I've been teaching for 23 years, and 20 of which I've taught American history and world history.
Mr. Tran is pretty special, to say the least. If you ever visit his classroom, he has hung up on the ceiling every country he's ever been to. In total, he's visited over 40 countries and has taken extended tours in each of them, taking the time to learn about each country's geography, history, and culture.
I normally try to give myself a couple of days solo so I can experience the culture on my own before I join the tour. And then when I join the tour takes me through the countries, and I'm traveling with a group of people, and we develop friendships, we stay in touch.
One of the farthest trips he's taken was to South Africa.
I did a trip from South Africa up to Kenya, through 8 countries in between. I think that was the farthest trip. I think the flight there with the connection flight was 42 hours that I spent in the air or at the airport.
It may seem that Mr. Tran just travels for leisure, but that's not the only reason.
The countries that I visited, they tend to be countries that I teach in world history or American history. And so the countries that I teach, they tend to revolve around Europe, Africa, Asia, and also Latin America. But Latin America is close to home, and so I will visit Latin America last. And the places that are far and more difficult, I'm visiting sooner while I still have the physical strength.
By traveling all around the world, he has gained a different perspective on life.
Two most important life lessons that I learned is how insignificant that I really am. When I am visiting majestic landscapes or slums or medieval castles, I just feel like I'm really insignificant in this life. And it humbles me. And I think that that is something that I can take to teaching, is that humility.
By going to the places he teaches, he makes the history more personal for his students.
Well, I feel like if I can bring history a little closer to my students by physically, by being there, you know, even making silly faces at historical sites that are, you know, very, you know, kind of seriously covered in their textbook, and to see their teacher there making silly faces like I did in Austria or in Italy. I was trying to bring history closer to my students rather than esoteric information that they are getting out of the book. And by showing them pictures of me being there, you know, I would hope to make history more meaningful for them.
Through pictures and videos, he believes his unique teaching style has made an impact on his students.
I get comments from students returning, both current students and alums, and they comment about the pictures. They comment about the pictures, and sometimes they will say that I'm the only teacher who is actually there at the history that they read about. And I think that the pictures, I think it helps me teach a lot.
The first trip that made him a traveler was when he visited Italy.
Italy was my first trip in 2010. After that trip, I made the determination that I am going to travel every single summer. And from that moment on, I was intent on visiting all of the places that I teach. And I was determined to take as many pictures as possible at those places, as well as videos. I've taken videos that I have not touched up or edited. It's sitting there in the hard drive, but I know that I'm going to use it in the future to teach.
I asked Mr. Tran what motivates him to travel.
My motivation for traveling is the beauty of this earth, number one. The history, number two. The architecture, number three. The culture and the people, number four. You know, the landscape, for example, when I'm standing in front of Victoria Falls, it's just absolutely beautiful. I don't have any words to say. And or when I'm sitting at the Namibia Canyon, I just feel so small and so insignificant by the beauty that I feel very inspired to travel every single year. And the architecture, every single country have their own unique architecture and history, the people and the culture. And students always ask me, Mr. Tran, do you have a favorite country or a favorite place? I don't have a favorite country or I don't have a favorite place, because every single country, every single town, every single locality, they teach me different lessons. And so I learn everywhere I go.
He believes that you have to be a lifelong learner in order to be a great teacher.
I am a lifelong student, for sure. And even every single year, even in my classroom, even though I've taught the same subject for 20 years, students will teach me every single year lessons, every single year. And so to be an effective teacher, a person must embrace learning for his entire life. And so, therefore, I am a lifelong learner.
Mr. Tran encourages everyone to travel because it makes you more aware and humble, and it teaches you a little bit about yourself.
I encourage everyone to travel because traveling is so inspiring. Traveling is food for the soul. I already mentioned the beauty, but experiencing the inequality of this earth makes me feel how lucky I am to live in this country. You know, for example, when I'm in the Casablanca slum in Morocco and I saw how people live there, I feel very grateful for the things that I often take for granted. But then I also see, like for example, in Botswana, where I see people live in huts, what I would categorize as poverty, and I go out into the town and I talk to the people, and they are very happy. They are happy living in their community, living in the way that they live, and they don't consider it poverty or poor. Yeah. Meanwhile, I am attaching my own values on them and I'm feeling sorry for them, when in fact they are actually happier than even me, with so much more little than me. And so it just tells me how much I take for granted that I am not that important in this world. And it's addicting, because it's uplifting. Yeah. At some places you get epiphanies, you know, you get many epiphanies, you know, just thoughts, random thoughts that are inspired by what you see, and it inspires you and it keeps you traveling every year, me at least. And I would recommend it for everybody.
Although Mr. Tran never visits places more than once, he has always had a great story to tell.
So, I'm in Madrid, and I'm out of cash. It was my last night in Madrid. I have to catch a flight out to Paris. I have to catch a flight out to Paris. Mm-hmm. And I have already secured a room in Paris. And so I go to the ATM to withdraw cash, and the machine did not spit out the ATM. I did not pay for a flight to Paris yet.
Oh, wow.
And my room in Paris was under this credit card, so I felt deeply scared at that moment, and I didn't know what to do. I did everything. When my credit card was taken, it was Sunday, the bank was closed. Long story short, as it turned out, I had my mom's American Express for an emergency. I was able to purchase a flight and I was able to secure a room in Paris. But yeah, that was one of the scariest moments.
And you'll get a lot of those different experiences, right? Just from traveling, you're gonna, not only is it just seeing the places, you're actually gonna learn just by traveling, right?
Every single year, there's a story. Okay, so when I was in Africa, my roommate owed me $1,000, his share of the rent, which was supposed to go into my bank account that I was gonna use in Africa. His check bounced. I was in Africa, $1,000 short. So you get problems and you have to troubleshoot. You constantly have to troubleshoot. And it's when you're traveling, you learn to think on your feet. You learn to be very resourceful because you confront, you know, you face a lot of problems. Mr. Cavada, he knows this. You get all kinds of hiccups and you have to resolve and troubleshoot.
After encountering some hardships, Mr. Tran used traveling as a therapy, and it later became a passion that he wanted to share with his students as a teacher. He recalled from his high school experience that learning wasn't engaging.
Because when I was going through school, the way that I learned was through sitting and doing book work, the period, my teacher would write the page number and the section in the book, and we would just all do the book work, and we would get kicked out. If we talked, there was no talking, just book work, silent. And so I wanted my students to have a meaningful experience with history. And I felt that if I can at least be there, because I remember reading in the book all the information about Auschwitz and Berlin and Moscow, and there were just words out of a book, and I just didn't see its relationship to me. And I just thought that if I can be there at that very place that they're reading, and if I can just, just stand there and oftentimes even make silly faces there, then I can at least, show them that, these places are real, and help make the story more meaningful and real. So that was my intent. That's why I visit places that I teach.
Through his love of traveling, Mr. Tran has been able to inspire his students in the classroom and to help them grasp history in a new way. His untraditional but effective teaching style engages students with his use of interactive pictures and videos taken from his trips from around the world. That is what makes Mr. Tran a unique individual at Mount Pleasant. A bowler, a traveler. What about a baseball playing hip hop artist? Our next guest has already developed a brand for himself through his music, his performances, his digital content, and even on the baseball field.
My name is Steve Soto. I go to Mount Pleasant High School and I am a senior class of 2019.
Steve is an independent hip hop artist that has several albums to his name. He began writing songs and making beats in 7th grade.
I remember one song I remember in middle school. Was it Stay Humble? Was it that?
Yeah,
I remember
Stay
that.
Humble.
That was a really nice song. When did you make that one?
I made that one, let's see. So in middle school, I made that in middle school, but I didn't release it until my freshman year of high school. Yeah. So yeah, that was one of my first songs I ever put out.
One of the unique aspects about Steve is how he creates his music. Most of his songs will start out as a story.
Most of my songs, there's always something behind it. There's always something I put out. Whenever I'm writing a song, there's like stuff that I'll be saying that sometimes doesn't, like, I would say like the storylines of each song is kind of something that I'm going through or that I see someone else is going through, stuff like that.
But when it comes to writing out the lyrics, there's a little magic that goes into it.
It's kind of funny, like when I feel a certain type of way, I have no idea how to explain it, but if I get in there and I start writing and stuff, I know exactly how to explain it.
Steve is talking about the creative process. As a musician and composer myself, I know exactly what he's describing. When you feel a certain way, you'll gravitate towards the mic or the piano and begin writing lyrics or composing melodies. You get into this creative mode, but when you get out of it, it's much harder to write or compose. How and why this phenomenon occurs remains a mystery. Sometimes it happens out of the blue.
There's some songs that I've made that I didn't mean to make. Like, I kind of just made, like, me and my boys during the summer, like, me, Pete, Anthony, like, we would just be listening to beats, and then we would just be rapping stuff, like, randomly, like, funny stuff. And then out of nowhere, like, yo, that would be a cool song. And then we just make it.
Steve believes the creative process may have to do with our emotions.
I think music is a very important outlet, not just to me, but for many other people. Like, even if they don't make music, if they hear music that, you know, relates to them, how they feel or anything, that's when they start listening to it and playing it over and over.
Because it's emotional.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they get connected to it. And I think that's one of the most, like, beautiful parts about music.
To make these songs, Steve draws inspiration from many great modern rap artists.
The first rap music that I listened to was Lil Wayne. He was my first, like, whoa, what is this? Like, this sounds cool. That's what really got into me. And then after that, I started listening to, like, Drake. I started listening to Kendrick Lamar. Like, the nowadays, like, Lil Uzi Vert, Lil Skies, like, all those, like, I think they're major creators, and I think it's really cool.
Other than creating it, Steve thinks one of the best parts about his music is performing it live and seeing the reactions.
I think the other fun part is performing, and when you're performing, to hear other people singing your songs that about how you feel, I think that's crazy. Like, that's pretty cool. And then, like on the inside, I'll be like, yo, that's dope. Like, that's crazy, people. And then on the outside, I'll be like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But, like, in reality, everybody knows that's cool. Like, that's something super dope, like, to experience. And I feel like every artist, no matter what kind of music they do, I feel like they experience that in some type of way.
Just recently, he released his latest album, Us Against the World, which is on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, and more. Steve hopes to be making an impact with his music and to inspire others.
So you think you're making an impact with your music, right?
That's something that I hope to do, and that's something that I always work to do, but I think the most important part is making music. I feel like all that stuff comes with it.
As for his future with music, Steve is unsure of where it will take him, but he promised that he'd always be making new music.
Honestly, right now I'm playing it by ear, but like this week, I'm releasing a new album this week, and so it's going to be out, and so I'm not too sure where that's going to take me, but wherever it takes me, that's where I'm going to end up being, and that's where I'm going to play it from. And I think it's important always to have a plan, but in this case, like, I don't know if it's going to take me this direction, or I don't know what, you know, there's always different type of connections that you'll find and meet. There's people you'll meet. So I think that just to always be prepared, be formal with everything that comes my way. And I think good things will come. Yeah.
Make sure, right, you're always going to be playing music, right? Regardless, even if it's not the main thing you do,
yeah.
You know, you may not be a pop star, you'll still be making
music. Always, yeah. No matter if... Yeah. No matter if 2 years nobody knows who I am, I'm still going to be making music because that's something that I like to do. And that's how I feel. If I feel a certain type of way, like I said before, I'm horrible with words, horrible at that stuff. But then for some reason with music, I'm like, this is natural. So if it's something natural for me to do, then I feel like that's something I should keep doing, you know.
For Steve, music is one of his two biggest passions. The other, baseball.
Ever since I could walk, I started in the living room of my house, same house I live in now. In the living room, I would just swing the bat, throw the ball. And I think I got into it because of my dad. He loved baseball. He played baseball at a young age as well. And on the TV, he would always have baseball on. So, like, around the house, that's something I'd always see. And then I would ask to get, like, a bat or, like, a ball. And then ever since, there's, like, videos of, like, me. I was, like, real small, and I could barely even walk, but I still had a ball in my hand. I still had, like, some type of something to deal with baseball.
Steve is the starting pitcher for the Mount Pleasant varsity baseball team. Just like Lift Music, Steve's dad was a major influence Lift Baseball.
Influenced you a lot, right? Would you say he's like a big influence in your hobbies in general?
Yeah, he's a huge inspiration, influence. He's a big influence, especially with he, like, even now for Mount Pleasant High School, he's the head coach of the varsity, and a lot of people don't know that. And the people that do, they think, oh, it's daddy ball or it's father son type of, but not once on a baseball field have I ever called him dad. Like, from the start, he told me, like, when we get on that baseball field, I'm coach and you're a player. That's how it's always going to be.
Playing baseball has taught him many important life lessons, including having mental strength, awareness, and focus.
Yeah, so for baseball, a huge thing that it's taught me is mental conditioning, how to push through different situations and how to deal with adversity. I would say how to be comfortable in uncomfortable situations, such as you're down by one, you have one more at bat to come up, but you're on the hill, bases are loaded, two outs, and you throw a ball and they score in the next run. That's something that you have to deal with mentally and just think of the next play and get back in the dugout to score more runs.
Steve tries his best to balance both making music, being a student, and playing a sport. Some days, baseball and schoolwork take precedent, but sometimes music is what feels best.
Like I said, music is more of a hobby. I'm really focused with baseball, so I'd say, like, if I do baseball and then I have practice, and then right after practice, if I have homework, then, like, that's no music for me. But then, like, if I have practice and then, like, I'm just relaxing on a weekend, I have nothing to do, I'm like, you know what, I'm gonna make some music. Like, or even if, like, even though academics is very important, sometimes I feel that the way you feel, and, like, if you need a vent about something, I feel like music is a way to express that. Even though you may have other things to do, I feel like sometimes if you just got to get something off your chest, you just got to get it off of your chest, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, as a fellow musician, too, I mean, whether it's on piano and saxophone, right? Sometimes you just want to.
Yeah,
let it out, right?
It's something you could just, like, escape to and just, like, do your own thing and not worry about anything.
Lift Baseball, Steve has a bright future ahead of himself, recently signing with a local university to play on their baseball team.
I got an athletic scholarship to Menlo College, and I just signed my letter of intent. So, yeah, thank you. And so this summer, I will be going there and spending time with the team and everything and going to all the games.
Although baseball will be his main priority, Steve said that he will continue to make music.
Like you said before, like I feel I should as well. I should always do music. Yeah. And I would say through college, it'll be a little bit more difficult. Yeah. But it's something that can be done, you know. You don't need a full studio always to make music. All you need is just the fundamentals, a computer, software, headphones, and a microphone. That's something that I could work with.
Always stay true to yourself and do what you love. It's important advice that we should all take. Steve's combination of music and baseball makes him one of the more unique individuals at Mount Pleasant. Melanie, Mr. Tran, and Steve. They are all unique individuals with interesting personalities, talents, accomplishments, and experiences. Melanie is an extremely talented bowler who, if given the opportunity, could play professionally among the best in the world. Mr. Tran is a world traveler who, through pictures and videos, has brought his adventures into the classroom.
and Steve is a recording artist who is taking his baseball talents to the collegiate level. Mount Pleasant should be proud to have these outstanding individuals be a part of their community. So the next time you see one of them, say hello and congratulate them for their accomplishments, because they are some of the few that make Mount Pleasant High School unique. I'd like to thank all the guests who obliged to share their knowledge and ideas and be featured on this podcast. I would also like to thank William Cavada, the multimedia teacher here at Mount Pleasant, for overseeing the production of this podcast, and Edward McDonald, who was the audio technician. I, Aristos Xanthus, was the producer, editor, and host. You can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and listen to my music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, and more. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the MPHS podcast.